date, June 12, 2018. This is The Better Life. I am your host, Timothy Lawson. Feeling good. 3 days away from Las Vegas. 2 days away. Man, my math is bad. 2 days away from Las Vegas. Take off on Thursday. I am taking my wife on her trip, her first trip to Las Vegas, Nevada. Not only was I surprised that she'd never been to Las Vegas, it's kind of crazy to believe that her and I are coming up on being together for 5 years. And this will be the first time that that I take her to Vegas. But better now than never. And we will be also enjoying our one-year marriage anniversary while we're there. So that is exciting as well. I am taking suggestions for off-strip properties that like would acquire a drive. So like I get it, Ellis Island is technically off the strip. That's walking distance. So properties like M, Red Rock, Green Valley Ranch, if you have a property that requires a drive to that you think I need to visit either for gaming or non-gaming reasons, let me know. Hit me up on Twitter at TheBetterLife. Also taking suggestions on day hikes. We plan on spending at least half of one day going out and enjoying the outdoors in the Las Vegas area. Probably going to hit up Red Rock Canyon, but if you have a suggestion for a day hike, something that's in like the 2 to 4 mile range, up to 5 miles, I mean, we could do longer, but we're trying to keep it short just for time reasons. Shoot me that suggestion. I'm curious. Couple things. Something that I've heard on podcasts a few times in the past few months is I've heard people talk about getting a sports bet and then making a sports bet in Las Vegas and then taking it home and then the dilemma of having to go back to cash it. Let me tell you that you don't need to do that. You can actually mail in your ticket and have a check sent to you. I did this actually the last time I went to Vegas. I was there for my bachelor party about a year ago, and I came home with some plays that were actually, I think, resolved within 24 hours of me leaving. So they weren't even like future bets. They were bets I wanted to make for the following day that I just was going to be out of Vegas for. I think 2 out of 3 won. Your ticket should have on the back of it a little form, like you put your name and your address and stuff like that. Send it certified mail or just anything that tracks it and then requires acknowledgement of receipts just for security purposes. But they will turn it around and send you a check. Lo and behold, a couple weeks later, I think I got a check from the Flamingo. And where I had made the bets originally, and everything was good to go, no problems. It's not foolproof. Nothing in life really is, but it is a reliable means of cashing your tickets to where you don't have to think or wonder like, oh, when am I gonna get back to Vegas to cash these out? Quick follow-up to my World Cup preview last week. I just want to remind everybody that if you're looking to bet the World Cup, be sure to shop for prices. I was watching a numbers game on VSiN the other day, and they were talking about future prices on World Cup teams at the South Point. And I want to say Peru was like 75-1. Which is wild because I had seen them at 200-1 offshore, had seen them somewhere else at 175-1. I imagine that what their price on the strip or anywhere in Nevada is probably has a wide range. So important lesson, and be sure to shop for prices. If you are looking to make World Cup bets and are curious as to what I will be playing, any bet that I make, I will be sharing on my Patreon page with all my patrons. And so if you want to get some insight on that action, come be a patron, patreon.com/thebetterlife. Appreciate your support. I know a thing or two about soccer. I'm no guru, but I know enough to where I'm feeling confident they're going to come away with some value in this World Cup. And for the whole duration of the World Cup, if I make a bet, I'm going to post it on there. I haven't really done much gambling as of late. I've been focusing on blackjack tournaments at MGM, and I've been saving up and sort of, you know, with this Vegas trip pending, haven't really gone out there and done much. I did not make it out to Delaware to make a sports bet, unfortunately, but, you know, our good friend Eric Rosenthal got a wager down for me so that way I could have a memento for the first day of betting outside the state of Nevada, so I do have that. MGM is having a blackjack tournament later this month, I believe July or June 23rd, I want to say it is. It's a Saturday. I'm definitely going to be enrolled in that. Coming off such a disappointing early release in the last tournament, I'm hoping to make a deeper and stronger run. You know, you're always going to make mistakes, but the true mistake is not learning from them. I feel pretty good going into this and looking forward to another fun blackjack tournament. This week's interview is with Dr. Mike from the podcast You Can Bet on That. I'm willing to guess that at least 75% of you have heard of that podcast. I'm willing to bet that at least 50% of you also listen to that podcast. Some number in between that, we're probably listening to that podcast before we ever even came and learned about my podcast. But for the 25% of you that maybe have never heard of that because you came from you were brought to the better life through another channel or through another community, You Can Bet on That is a podcast for the recreational gambler, and I think it is the epitome of podcasting for the recreational gambler, and I mean that in the best way, because I think it was one of the first podcasts that I came across when I was looking for gambling content outside of sports betting, and I was blown away that I had never found it before, and just how much of an easy listen it is, how much entertainment is there, and how much insight is there. And I've been preaching for years that the best content is content that both entertains and informs. And I think that Mark and Dr. Mike do a wonderful job. Mark was on the podcast earlier this year, and now we have Dr. Mike talking to us about how he got into gambling, how he sort of turned into the loose gambler that we know him to be, some stories from his gambling, and what him and Mark may be doing in the future for gambling trips. Enjoy. All right, Dr. Mike from You Can Bet on That. Sir, it's a pleasure talking to you. I've noticed that Mark sometimes makes the rounds on the podcast. We don't hear too much from you, so it's nice to talk to you.
Yeah, no, you know, the problem is I work a lot. That's the number one problem. But number two, it's, I'm just not that technically advanced, I guess.
Very well. Dr. Mike, we start every one of these conversations at the same point, because all of us gamblers have one thing in common, and is that at one point in our life, we saw what gambling was, right? We were exposed to it. Bring us back to that day for you. Were you maybe not when you first started gambling yourself, but when you saw it for the first time?
Well, you know what? I think I've been thinking about this, and I think it goes back to I was about 22, maybe not quite 22 years old, and me and some friends of mine were playing poker after work, and it was pretty late on a Friday night, and somebody said, you know, we should just go to Vegas, and that's what we did. We left at, like, you know, 4 a.m. and drove to Vegas, stayed all day Saturday, and then drove back Sunday to San Diego.
Do you remember what you played?
Yeah, well, we played mostly blackjack.
Okay.
And we went down to, like, that area where used to be the Stardust and Circus is there, and there was a Silver City.
Sure.
Was a small casino there, and Silver Slipper was there. Silver Slipper.
Wow.
And Slots of Fun, which I believe is still there.
Is Slots of Fun still there?
I think, isn't it still there?
Yeah, I think you're right. I think.
I think it is. I haven't been down that way in, oh my God, it's probably been 20 years since I've been down there. But actually, I'm going to go in July, just as a side note, to Vegas. And we're planning on going down there to Circus. I just want to see what it's like now.
Yeah.
But anyway, we went and just like an overnight thing, and played blackjack. And I remember doing so well, and I was playing $1 blackjack at Silver City. And I think I must have, you know, won maybe close to $100, just a dollar at a time. And I remember driving home thinking, wow, this is great. And then from then on, we just kept going. But I think that was the initial, you know, start. And blackjack was the only game we knew then. And then, you know, I learned other games as time went on, craps and whatnot. But it was initially that blackjack. And
yeah.
I remember my mom giving me a big lecture about, you know, it's dangerous in Las Vegas and be careful. And I said, oh, it'll be fine. You know, how are 5 22-year-olds going to get in trouble?
Right. So, yeah. Well, that rarely yeah. happens.
That rarely happens. So anyway, yeah, we made it back fine. And so I guess that's it. I think that's how it all started for me.
Yeah. We've mentioned it a few times on the show that it seems like you're almost, people who have a longer life of gambling are usually people who did well in their first trip.
Yeah.
So maybe, maybe it's a curse and a blessing at the same time to win in your first time out gambling.
Exactly. That's exactly true. But, you know, you have to, I don't know, I think there's a genetic component, too. I think you have to be predispositioned to want to gamble. You know, you have to have a certain kind of personality.
Yeah. I was talking about...
I know...
Go ahead.
So I was going to say, I know that, like, you know, my dad likes it, and his brothers liked it. So... I'm sure there's some genetic component in there that drove me in that direction.
Yeah. I was talking to my wife earlier and talking about how, you know, when it comes to like emotional responses and like what we feel as humans, the like lows seem to be more present, and like you can feel those more than you can feel highs sometimes. And that,
sure.
and that,
sure.
and that probably like when it comes to like gambling addiction and stuff like that, that's oftentimes like what people are, you know, people are chasing. And I think that there's an emotional component to it too, is the, you know, the feeling that you get while you're playing.
Right. Oh, I agree with that 100%. Because when you're winning, for those of us who enjoy it, it's such a good thing, such a good feeling. You almost feel like you're on top of your game. And,
yeah.
And you know, and it nothing can go wrong. And for me, anyway, you know, that feeling, you kind of crave that. You kind of crave that excitement.
So, you know, we refer to you as Dr. Mike. Anybody that's a fan of your podcast is probably familiar with this. But for those that that aren't, what sort of practice do you have? What kind of doctor are you?
Oh, I'm a general dentist.
General dentist.
Dentist. Yeah, and Mark's children were the ones that started calling me Dr. Mike when they were real little. You know, they'd say, oh, we're going to take you to see Dr. Mike. Now, they'd see me at the house or at home, you know, and... You know, instead of calling me by my surname or something, you know, they would just say, "Oh, Dr. Mike," and so
yeah.
I just kind of caught on, I guess.
So, you know, the podcast You Can Bet On Now. You guys have been doing that for a while now, right? That's going to be five or six years now.
I think we're in our fifth, going on sixth year.
Yeah,
and most of our family and friends, when we started it, you know, swore to us that this would last a few months and. That would be it.
Yeah.
But, enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, so what is it that you enjoy about it? Is it gives you and Mark a reason to you know hang out? Is it just you guys like talking about gambling that much? Well, I mean, what keeps you doing it year by year?
Well, I think you hit it on the head. I think first of all we enjoy talking about it, and we used to do it just him and I when we go gambling. I mean, we drive somewhere, like say we were driving to Vegas or we were driving up to Harris Rincon, and we'd have an hour to sometimes 5 hours in the car together. And, you know, we'd just discuss all the gambling things like, oh, you know, what's going to be your strategy and, you know, this and how's this going to work? And then Mark approached me one day and said, yeah, we should do a podcast about this because we like talking about it. So that's how it evolved. And, yeah, and we enjoy each other's company. And I think it adds a little bit of excitement into our lives because, you know, you get in a routine with your family and stuff, and And you have fun things, but this is a, you know, kind of a weekly fun thing that we do.
Yeah. So how is it having a friend, and you guys have been friends since college, is that right?
Well, just out of high school, actually. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And you guys have been gambling buddies for that long?
Oh, yeah, pretty much. I mean, we worked together. We went to the same high school, and Mark was a year behind me. And we kind of didn't know each other well. But then we got a job where we both worked at the same restaurant. And, you know, after, you know, guys hanging out after work, talking, and there was a group of us that liked to play cards. So we started playing poker. And then it evolved into late-night craps games in the back room of the restaurant after it was closed. And then it evolved into, you know, groups of us going to Vegas on a regular basis. And Mark and I were kind of the core group. You know, we both enjoyed that so much. But we had several other friends, and their lives have changed, you know, through either marriage or they've moved or something. But yeah. Mark and I have always, you know, been in the same area. So it just carried on. Boy, we had so many late-night craps games in the back room. We had a felt, and we just clear a bunch of tables and play craps on the floor, and we take turns dealing. You know, one person would deal one night, and someone would deal the next night, and we were playing for pennies, nickels, and dimes.
Right.
But that kind of fueled our fire, I think. A lot of it.
You don't exactly play for pennies, nickels, and dimes anymore, huh?
No, we added a few zeros to the end of those.
So what has it been like having a common friend or a friend throughout your life that you've been able to share this with? Because I think one thing that and I've mentioned this that I've in my personal life that I haven't always had a friend that also liked gambling. Therefore, it was oftentimes like it was either to go do it on my own or, you know, and that's not always as fun. So I mean, have you? Do you notice when Mark's not available to go to the casino?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Sure. Definitely. You know, I think this is true for Mark too. I could probably count the number of times I've been gambling by myself on my fingers. I mean, it's almost always with somebody.
Yeah.
You know, Mark and I a lot, you know, my dad would go with me. We had a real close friend, Mark and I, Paul, and he would go, sometimes him and I, sometimes Mark and him. But it's so unusual for either of us to go by ourselves. It's just not the same experience.
Yeah. So, I mean, do you...
And I would...
Let's say those times that you've gone by yourself, do you just not enjoy... Do you miss, like, the camaraderie, or is there something that's just not as fulfilling about that experience when you're not doing it with somebody?
Yeah, you know, I think it's mostly just you don't enjoy it as much. When you're winning, you know, it's nice to have your buddy there or somebody that you can revel in the win. And then when you're losing also, it's nice to have somebody to say, oh yeah, that one didn't go good. You know, you can bitch and moan the whole way home. But, yeah, it's just the experience. It's just nice to have somebody. I recently had to go to Vegas for something and I went on my own and, you know, it wasn't that much fun. I mean, it was like, oh, you know, I'm winning, and you talk to the people around you, of course,
yeah.
But it's just not the same.
How did you develop into, because on the podcast, you're sort of known as the looser player, especially at the craps table.
Yeah.
How did you evolve into that?
I don't know. I think it's kind of my nature. Mark, by nature, is very calculated and very, you know, he doesn't care if he wins a penny or $100. He just wants to make sure he wins.
Yeah.
And for me, my nature is more like, oh, I'd like to take a risk. I'd like to see that big win. So, you know, I'm the opposite. I don't care if I lose $100, but I want to try and win $1,000. So,
yeah,
so I think it's just our personalities.
Sure. I do remember when him and I were playing Pai Gow, we were doing okay, and he was up by a little bit, and he's like, yeah, I'm gonna cash in. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, yeah, it's a psychological thing. Like, I want to leave up. And
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Mark always wants to leave up. And I like leaving ahead, but I'd rather leave a big winner than just a little winner. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know why. It's like I think, well, you know, I'll just take a risk. And if I hit this hand, I'll go home a big winner. And if I don't hit it, I'll go home, you know, I'll have lost a little bit. No big deal. So
I'm curious, do you, and this is something I'm curious on with most gamblers, do you feel like you have the most discipline to leave while ahead or to quit before you go bust?
Oh, boy, that's a rough question.
Yeah.
Definitely, I think for me, it's not quit before I go bust. It's probably leave, you know, while I'm ahead.
Yeah.
If those are my two choices, I'm probably going to leave while I'm ahead, because I usually don't quit before I go bust.
Yeah. And then I guess
if I'm down, I try and get back.
Yeah. I guess the other part of that question then is, when you're ahead or when you are down, which scenario are you more likely to then leave once you're back to even? So, like, if you're ahead and you start losing and you hit even, are you more likely to leave then or when you're down and finally get yourself back to even?
I think when I'm down and get back to even,
okay,
I would be more likely to leave.
Yeah.
And feel like, you know, like a winner because I came back versus, you know, being way ahead and then losing it all, and I get under, and I think, God, I was so far ahead. Let me just try again a little more, see if I can get back ahead. So that's usually me. And Mark's the opposite. Mark's the opposite. Mark will, if he's way ahead, if he gets up a couple $1,000 on the craps table, he's done.
Yeah.
He'll just cash out. And he has some discipline to, like, just sit there and watch me play for 2 hours, which I can't do. I'd be, like, itching to, you know, play some more.
Yeah,
and he can do that, and when he's down too, by the same theory, he'll get down and he'll say, okay, well, I've lost enough, that's it, I'm done, and he'll sit and watch.
How do you feel when people are watching you gamble? Because I mentioned this on, like, the last show, is if it was someone, like, in our group, like, we're, like, that's one thing, but, like, if it was, like, a friend who was just, like, coming with me to the casino, or someone just watching me gamble feels weird to me.
Yeah, it does feel weird to me, too. And it's funny because I guess I'd have to say I have different feelings about different people. So someone I'm not so close to, if they're watching me, it's okay. I'll just chat with them, and I don't feel like I need to make them play or I need to get them to play. But when Mark's watching me, I'm always like, here, I'll give you $100, Mark. Just get back in the game. It's just more fun for me if he's playing.
Right.
So we've done that a lot where he said, no, I quit. And I said, well, here, this – play with my money, and we usually work out some kind of agreement to his benefit, and I'll say something like, well, tell you what, I'm going to give you $500, play your way, and whatever, if you end up ahead, you keep 20% of it and give me 80, and if you lose, no big deal, it's my money.
Yeah.
So, and I do that just so I have, you know, so he's in the game and I have someone to play with. It's just more fun for me.
Sure. Yeah, that's. I think everybody listening is wishing they had a gambling buddy like that.
Yeah, Mark's good. Sometimes he's in a no lose scenario.
Yeah. So how do you? You guys mentioned at Podcasters After Dark, someone asked you about your wives and their reception to it. And you both commented on how wonderful your wives have been in letting you not only pursue the You Can Bet on That endeavor, but to be recreational gamblers in the beginning. Has it always been the case? Was that something that evolved through the development of your family? Like, how did your family first receive that and then get to where you are now?
Yeah, well, in my case, and I don't know about Mark so much, but in my case, my wife has always been supportive of that. She knew, you know, when we first met and dated, that was something I was interested in and hobby, and she's always supported it. And we don't really have any issues with that as far as, you know, going too much or anything.
Yeah.
And I try and, you know, be fair and, you know, limit it to a certain amount too. We don't go crazy. Like, you know, we have a lot of casinos here in San Diego. And I mean, if a person wanted, and we know people like this out of the casinos that are there every day.
Yeah.
I mean, every single day and for large chunks of time. So we try and limit it to once a week for 4 or 5 hours. And, you know, our Vegas trips are a lot less than they used to be. And years ago when I was single, it was several a month. And, you know, now it's one every 3 or 4 months. So we've kind of, I guess, evolved into a situation in our family where it's kind of like we know, I know, my children know, my wife knows what the right amount is and what the wrong amount is if it gets to be too much.
And as a father, how is your exposure to letting your kids see gambling, and like do you how much of that do they get to see? Do you educate them? Do they know basic strategy yet?
They do. They're pretty good at blackjack. They know basic strategy at blackjack. They deviate from it a lot, but they do know what the right move is. And they're still young. They're not of gambling age yet, so right. They don't, they don't see me play craps in the casino. Although I had a craps table, and they've seen us play here in the house and stuff, and so they understand the game a little bit. And they're curious. I have two daughters, and the one, you know, probably will never be a gambler. It's just not her nature. The other one, she might be. So we'll see.
Yeah, little father daughter vacations off.
Yeah, father daughter entertainment.
Yeah. So the name of your podcast is You Can Bet on That, and I'm curious, what is the most obscure either game or wager you've made in your life, if you can recall?
Let's see, most obscure. That's a good question. I don't even know how to really define that. What would you consider obscure?
Yeah, well, I guess things that I've seen that I haven't done yet, but things that I've like maybe a friendly wager with a friend. I've seen there's a hostel down in Belize where there's a little square on the ground, or like there's a bunch of numbered squares on the ground, and you buy a square, and then they throw a chicken on the squares, and wherever it poops, like that square wins. Like
that's yeah. I've heard of that.
Yeah, so like games like that.
No, I've never done anything quite that crazy. I'll tell you what, we used to play a poker game at Mark's house real regularly every week, and we would have a lot of side bets. So as far as obscurity goes, I think that's pretty odd. I mean, we'd be in the middle of a poker game, and two of us would look at each other and say, you know, I'll bet you that, you know, my cards in this hand of poker add up to more than your cards. Something like that. And we used to do that quite regularly. There was quite a bit of side betting, which Mark would control. He would never partake in the side betting, but he would always be the one to, like, okay, this is the bet. and then determine who would win.
Yeah.
That was kind of his thing. But as far as like in casinos and stuff, I mean, it's mostly been, for me anyway, you know, blackjack, craps, pie-gow, a little roulette here and there, a few of the odd games, you know, we play every once in a while just to see how they were. But
yeah.
Nothing real obscure. No, even sports betting, mostly, you know, pretty standard sports bets. I haven't made any Super Bowl bets, like, you know, who's going to do what, you know, who's going to be the first one on the camera or stuff like that. I haven't really got into that.
I'm laughing because those were the only bets I had on the past at Super Bowl.
They're the funnest bets, I'll give you that.
Yeah.
I just...
But what was fun about it is, you know, my friends know that I'm a bettor, right? And so when we were there, you know, people were asking me, like, what my bets were. And they were like, oh, who do you got? And I'm like, I have Giselle making the screen – or getting on camera more than two times. Like, that's what I have. And so it was fun because then, like, people got excited. Like, oh, there's Giselle! Like, we were almost more into, like, the side bets that I had than we were the game itself, so –
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those are fun. I mean, I like those. I wish there were more of those, actually. Even though I haven't really done that, I wish there were more. I love talking about them.
Yeah, there are a lot of...
You know, you see them in the Super Bowl, right? But you don't see them... You don't see those kind of bets on a routine basis.
Yeah, in regular games, you see prop bets for, like, what the players, how they perform, like, you know, Tom Brady over-under 25 or completions or something like that. But, yeah, nothing weird on, like, the broadcast or will Al Michaels say, you know, the word fart or, you know, anything weird like
yeah.
that.
Will he wear a red tie or a blue tie? So,
yeah. I remember, you know, like, there was – there was one. I mean, this was a regular. This is a regular prop bet now that they've been in the Super Bowl so often. But I know, like, what color hoodie will Bill Belichick be wearing at kickoff? And like, there's people that were like doing serious deduction on what color it probably will be and what the value was on certain colors. So that stuff does get fun.
I love that. When they talk about Belichick, there was one actually in this last Super Bowl. Were whether he would host Saturday Night Live or not.
Oh, that's a good one.
After the Super Bowl. So after the, if they had won the Super Bowl afterwards, what were the odds he would host Saturday Night Live? And I think it was like going off at like 500-1. Because, you know, can you see Belichick on TV? Oh, my God.
I don't know. I can see him being boring. Like, I can see them, like, I can see them inviting him to be who he is. And
right.
I don't know.
And then laughing about how boring he is.
Right.
I mean, it would be so dry and so boring.
And for anybody listening, these are not – every prop bet that we have brought up so far is not available in the state of Nevada because Nevada – can only book a bet that can be bounced against a official box score or an official result. So, so there is no like official result on whether or not Bill Belichick's hoodie was blue. So you'd have to go offshore to get those bets.
You have to go offshore. And doesn't England take a lot of those bets?
They might. Yeah, William Hill and like Ladbrokes and stuff probably have bets like that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think they take a lot of weird bets like that.
Which is going to be interesting. So, I mean, that's one of the interesting developments of this sports betting thing, right, is, like, Delaware just started booking action. I don't know what their, like, I would have to look into, like, what their gaming commission says they can and can't. And could, I mean, could states, like, state by state now be different on that? That could be really interesting.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, you know, maybe some state wants to, you know, somehow draw money into their state that they wouldn't normally get by offering some, you know, bizarre bets, I guess.
I'm curious, we know that that you give the casinos good play, and I'm curious what we know we got like the little taco holder truck as like a gift and that was a strange gift. Is there any other comp that you've been offered that you've received that's a little off the norm?
Oh, comp. Oh, that's a good question. Let me think about that. Get a lot of, you know, airfare stuff, the standard stuff and rooms. Not really. I mean, you know, most of my comps comes from Caesars Entertainment.
Right.
And it's mostly rooms and food and free play, a lot of free play. There's a lot of giveaways. I'm going to one coming up that's like a $1,700 shopping spree at the mall at Caesar's Palace. Stuff like that. Tournaments, TVs, computers. God, we've got so much stuff over the years.
Now, what do you do with that stuff? Like, I would imagine I would start turning them into Christmas presents. Like, what do you do with that stuff?
Yeah, a lot of it turns into presents. Mark needed a TV once, so I got a TV for him just because we didn't need one.
Right.
And the funny thing is every time something comes, you know, Mark and I will be driving and I'll say, look at this app, look at this offer, Mark, they're going to give me like a, you know, 52 inch TV, you know, if I go, you know, April, whatever. And Mark will say, do you need another TV? And my answer is always yes. I need another TV. We've got so many TVs, they're just in boxes. But no, most of them are gifts. You know, a funny thing is, if you have children, I just give a lot of it to my kids.
Right.
And you know, hopefully they'll use it at some point in their life. But nothing real weird. I can't think of anything weird. I mean, they have that taco truck. That was pretty strange giveaway. And, you know, I think I said on the during our podcast that, you know, the six-pack of Coke, that's my favorite. and you just had to be there to see that. I mean, just literally, you know, 1,000 people in the casino walking around all holding a six-pack of Coke. So, you know, everyone gets their Coke, and then it's like, oh, do I go put that in my car? Just people just carrying it around. So
right.
On the blackjack, you know, six-pack of Coke sitting there.
Because one wants to not take it home, right? So everybody's,
everybody's
holding on to it. Yeah.
It's a six-pack of Coke. It has some value, but...
So, I'm curious, Dr. Mike, give me, and you can take a second to think about this, but put me in your best case scenario, if you could choose a scenario to be in what casino are you playing, or are you in, what game are you playing, what drink do you have, and who are you playing with?
Well, for me, it would be at Caesar's Palace, and I think it would be Mark, my dad, and my wife. And we would be playing craps, and we would be at our favorite craps table, which it's hard to explain where it is in the casino, but we have a favorite craps table there. We'd be playing craps, and I think it would be best if my dad was rolling and he was just on a heater, just on the hottest roll. And that, for me, that would be very, very fun.
Yeah, very cool. So the last question, Dr. Mike, and one that that I've asked several people before you, we're at a 4-3 tally right now, looking to possibly get a fifth on one side or tie it up on the other on with the fourth. I'm going to give you two options. You're going to bet your life on one or the other. Should you win the bet, you'd be given an entire second lifetime. If you lose, that's it. Muhammad Ali or Mike Tyson, both of them in their prime, which side would you bet your life on?
Yeah, I'm glad you asked this question. seriously, I am so glad you asked this question. I have this argument with a friend of mine all the time, and I am totally, totally convinced Muhammad Ali wins that fight. And I've seen every Mike Tyson fight. And I've seen most of Muhammad Ali's, all the big ones, not so much the early ones in his career, but most of the big ones. And I'll tell you what would happen. Tyson would come out with a fury. Ali would just hold his arms up and just let Tyson pound his gloves. And after Tyson was tired in about round 3 or 4, Ali would start dancing around him and just peck away at him until he knocked him out. That's what I think would happen.
In their
prime.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. Bill Krakenberger, Christian Pina, Julian from Vegas Confessions, and Eric Rosenthal all agree with you as well. You are the fifth person to take Ali, and then therefore retiring that question from the show. So,
well, it's just you know, Ali was a master of. Well, the rope-a-dope towards the end of his career, and he did it earlier. He just didn't have a name for it, but he would just let people pound, and the guy could not be knocked out.
Yeah.
He just had the jaw, you know, of steel, and he would just let him wear down, and then he was so fast and moved so well. And you know what's funny? I've met Mike Tyson and talked to him, and we had a really good conversation, and he's a super nice guy. And he's a great boxer, but against Ali, I'd have to take Ali.
Yeah, I'm with you. There's only a few people that disagree with you, but you know,
probably younger people, right?
Yeah. One of them being Adam Bauer. So go ahead and give him crap about that next time you see him. Yeah,
of course, Adam. But the younger people, I mean, because they probably didn't see Ali fight. I mean,
right.
They've heard about it and stuff. So it's, you know, it'd be like, you know, me saying. You know, is Bob Cousy the best basketball player? Well, I didn't see him play. You know, that was a long time ago, and he played in a totally different era. I've got a basketball one, too, so, you know,
yeah.
People argue LeBron and Michael, and that's hands down Michael Jordan.
You know what? That's going to end up, after LeBron James retires and we're on to the next superstar of the next generation, the LeBron-Jordan debate is just going to be a debate between generations, I think.
It'll depend on how old you were at what time.
Yep, exactly. Well, Dr. Mike, I really appreciate your time, and it was fun to get to know a little bit more about you as a gambler and as you as a person, of course, and great job over there on You Can Bet on That. It's in my staple rotation, and you guys do a great job.
Oh, thanks. We really appreciate everybody listening, and we love doing it. And I wanted to say thank you to you for hosting Podcasters After Dark, for sponsoring it.
Yeah, it was my pleasure.
You know, I know you couldn't be there because of family obligations, but it was a good event, and you know, it's always nice to see everybody. I tell Mark this all the time. We should all get together more frequently because, you know, it happens maybe once a year or something. But it's kind of fun when you see people.
Yeah.
And the more you see them, you know, you feel like kind of like they're your friend. Like we've seen Eric Rosenthal so many times out here in San Diego and around the country. And, you know, you, all of a sudden, you know, it's like, oh, you know, he's one of our good friends.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, you're absolutely right.
And that doesn't happen that much where you meet people from different cities and different, you know, age groups and just every, and they become your friend. So,
absolutely.
So that's part of the thing I love.
Yeah. I know you guys just recently went to Gamblepalooza because you hadn't been up there gambling. Is there another place in the United States that you guys are eyeing to go gamble for the first time?
Yeah, well, our next, most likely, our next trip is going to be to Mississippi.
Oh, okay.
To, what's it called?
Biloxi.
Biloxi, yeah. Either Biloxi or, what's the other place down there?
I know where you're trying to go, and I can't think of it either.
Yeah, I can't think of it either. But that's what we're thinking for next year. So
Okay. We'll
see. Well, yeah, we'll see how that goes, and then
we were kind of
hoping there'd be another Gamblepalooza, just not at Foxwoods, just somewhere else.
Well, I think there's a good chance that happens, and especially as the East Coast starts waking up on getting legalized sports betting, I would. I would imagine if one of those areas that we've been talking about also then legalized sports betting, that there's a really good chance that Gamblepalooza would go to that location.
Yeah, that would be fun. Seeing that, we get to see everybody, so.
Yeah.
That's something we look forward to.
Wonderful. Well, Dr. Michael, let you get back to your family. Thanks so much for joining me.
All right. Oh, no problem. Anytime. Talk to you later, Tim.
Well, Dr. Mike, thank you so much for your time, sir.
All right. You're welcome.
It was a lot of fun talking to Dr. Mike about him as a gambler, hoping that I get an opportunity to throw some dice with him in the near future. Be sure to go check out You Can Bet on That if you don't already listen. I will be documenting my time in Vegas as I can. The priority, of course, is to enjoy my time with my wife, but as I think of it and as I get the opportunity, I will be snapping pictures of where I am and what I'm doing, and I'll be sharing those on Instagram. Instagram at The Better Life, just like it is on Twitter. If you are curious about what I'll be doing and where I'll be, any gaming that I might be doing, that is where you can follow me. Patreon.com/The Better Life is where you can support the show. I'm Timothy Lawson. Good night. Good luck.